This morning, our Bible story is really long. It's almost an entire chapter long. It's a story about a man who is blind and receives sight. I'm going to tell you this story, but I want you to close your eyes. Can everybody close their eyes? Cover them with your hands if you need to. Do you think you can keep them covered for the entire time? See if this helps you listen. When I finish telling the story, we'll say a prayer together. Jesus was in the city of Jerusalem, and while he was there, each day he went to the temple to teach. One day, Jesus and his disciples, who are his closest friends, were walking along when he saw a man who is blind begging for money. The disciples asked, "Who did something wrong, the man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Not the man or his parents," answered Jesus. "This happened so the mighty work of God can be shown through the man." Then Jesus spit on the ground, made mud with the spit, and rubbed it on the man's eyes. Have any of you ever made mud before? Yeah. And Jesus told them, "Go," was in the pool of Siloam. The man hurried away, and when he came back, he could see. His neighbors and people who used to see him begging looked at him and asked one another, "Is this the man who used to beg here?" Some said, "Yes," and some said, "No, they just look alike." The man shouted, "It is me." His neighbors were curious. "How come you can see now?" they asked. They took the man to the authorities, who are the religious leaders, who asked the man how it was he could see. He told them, "He put mud on my eyes. I washed in the pool of Siloam, and now I can see." These Jewish leaders argued about whether the person who healed the man was from God or not. Some even thought the man had not been born blind. How could this be, they wondered. So they went to his parents and asked them a lot of questions. "Is this your son? Was he born blind? How come he can see now?" His parents answered, "Yes, he is our son. Yes, he was born blind. If you want to know how he can see now, then ask him. He is old enough to answer for himself." For a second time, the Jewish leaders went to the man who was no longer blind. They still wanted to know about the man who had given him sight. So they asked him, "The man you say healed you, what did he do?" The man sighed. "I told you and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again?" The man and the religious leaders argued back and forth until the leaders sent the man away. When Jesus heard this, he found the man he had healed. When he found him, he asked, "Do you believe in the one sent from God?" "Who is he?" asked the man. "I want to believe in this one." "You have seen him," said Jesus. "He is talking to you now." "Lord, I believe," said the man, and he worshiped Jesus. All right, so we're going to say a prayer. Can everybody close your eyes if you have reopened them? God of infinite wisdom and vision, you see the possibilities for peace all around us, and you call us to be your partners in loving, healing, and renewing creation. Welcoming God, thank you for the stories of Jesus, especially when he shows the love you have for us. Amen.
Once upon a time, there was a man born blind. The people, unsure of why he was unlike the rest, asked what sin caused him to be born blind. Jesus replied by saying that no one had sinned, and this man had been born blind so that the works of God could be seen through him. He then spit on the ground and somehow managed to turn his saliva into mud. Gross, right? Then he took his saliva mud and smeared it across the blind man's eyes and told the man to go wash in the pool of Siloam. Now, I don't know about you, but if some random guy came up to me and turned his spit into mud and smeared it on me, I'd be a little creeped out. But the blind man went and washed in the pool of Siloam, and when he came back, he somehow wasn't blind anymore. When the blind man's neighbors saw him after he was healed, they didn't think it was him. "How could this be the same man if he was blind before?" they asked. But the blind man said, "It is me," and began to tell his neighbors of Jesus and how Jesus had healed him. When he finished, they asked, "Where is this Jesus?" But the blind man did not know. The neighbors, who did not recognize him, were suddenly aware that they no longer saw him the same way. The label of being blind changed the way people saw the man, and because of that, when he was healed, they could see past the label. Maybe this story is trying to tell us that the blind man was the one who could actually see. The others are blinded by the fact that there is more to the blind man than his blindness. Because he can't see, the blind man doesn't place labels on the neighbors, so he can see them for who they really are. It's like when I see teachers outside of school. I find it really strange. We label our teachers by their job, and seeing past that label to realize they might actually have real lives is really strange. We all exist outside of labels others give us, so why do we assume others don't exist outside of the labels that we give them? On a Sunday night in January of last year, a good friend of mine fell asleep in her mom's bed to be awoken a few hours later by ambulances arriving to take her passed out mother to the hospital. Later that night at the hospital, her family was told that her mom had a blood clot that had reached her brain and there wasn't anything they could do. After that night, her life was never the same. By the next week, she was living in a new town, in a new house, with her dad, brother, stepmom, and one-month-old half-brother. She started at my school soon after, and we became friends last summer. Much like the people in this story who were unsure of why the man was born blind, I'm unsure of why my friend lost her mom. What did she do to deserve this? What did the man do to deserve being blind? We often find ourselves thinking, asking what we do to deserve the bad things that happen to us. But just like the blind man in the story, we are all faced with problems that don't define us, but teach us how to love the flaws in ourselves. When was the time that you labeled someone? Take the paper from the bulletin and answer this question.
This next part of the passage reveals a lot of questions and not many answers. We don't learn very much about Jesus, the man born blind, or the nature of this miracle. What we do see, however, is the man born blind confronted with disbelief and questions about who he is, what his history is, and who Jesus is. The Jewish leaders he speaks to refuse to believe him, interrogating him about the act and the man who performed this miracle, and even asking the man's parents if he really was born blind. The Pharisees write this man off as a sinner, despite knowing little to nothing about him. And if he is a sinner, the Pharisees see no reason to trust him or even give him the benefit of the doubt. They assume the differences of this man, of being born blind, must result from a sin committed by the man himself or his parents. I think this sort of quick judgment happens often in all of our lives. We see people different than us, and we perceive them as less than. We take the misfortunes or just plain differences between our lives and try to find a way to blame their behavior or their character for it. I'm a junior in high school, and I'm really interested in biology. Cells, disease, and the brain fascinate me, but what interests me most is when the scientific part of people merge with the human part. In my AP biology class, we've been recently studying the brain and began to talk about addiction. The American Society of Addiction Medicine defines addiction as a primary chronic disease of brain reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry. Dysfunction in these circuits leads to characteristic biological, psychological, social, and spiritual manifestations. This is reflected in an individual pathologically pursuing reward and/or relief by substance use and other behaviors. So clearly, it is accepted widely, at least medically, that addiction is a biological dysfunction rather than a fault of character. I think this can be a bit hard to understand, especially when we see so much information that demonizes these people as selfish and immoral. But in reality, they are suffering from an illness. Although this situation can be awful and can damage and ruin the lives of many people, addicts are not addicts because they are innately bad. This situation connects very strongly to the story of the man who was born blind. This man was born with this difference. He was born blind, but he did not commit a sin to cause this, and he is not a bad person because of it. These addicts are not bad people, and they don't become addicted to things because they are weaker or more selfish than anyone else. They are different, and they have a pretty severe misfortune, but that does not define them. When the Pharisees question the blind man about Jesus and this miracle, he replies, we know that God does not listen to sinners. The blind man's situation is not because of sin, and an addict's isn't either. Just because someone is different than us doesn't mean they are worth less than us or committed some evil act to become this way. I think this story shows that we as Christians, or just decent human beings, when we confront someone who is different than ourselves, we need to acknowledge their differences and perhaps misfortunes, but not define them by it. So the question I pose to you, what is the difference you have trouble overlooking in other people? Refer back to the insert in the bulletins and answer this question.
At first, I was hesitant to intertwine politics and religion in a 3-minute sermon. But then I did it anyways. This passage raises an important question. How important is sin? I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not here to answer that question. I'm not here to pry open your minds and shove in my perspective, because who wants to take advice from someone who only has a fraction of the life experience? I know personally when I received style tips from a 3rd grade boy, I got very defensive. And I don't think it's because I was secretly self-conscious about the lack of Ninja Turtle appliques on my t-shirt. No, it's because I don't like having my way of thinking challenged. And if I can blame my defensiveness on the age of my fashion consultant, then suddenly the discomfort of the situation dissolves. When we read these kinds of stories, we often picture ourselves on the side of compassion and understanding. We reject the opinions that we innately disagree with, and worst of all, we judge. We judge those whose lifestyles and opinions differ from ours. It's easy for us to imagine helping a blind man. But what if it's not a blind man? What if it's a man in a Make America Great Again hat? It's hard to love our neighbor unconditionally when their beliefs differ from ours. It's even harder when the foundation of their beliefs is our shared religion. We have to wonder, what does that say about us? How can two people have completely different interpretations of the same core values? It isn't easy for the Pharisees to show compassion to the blind man. Rather than rejoicing in a miracle, they choose the side of judgment. This is where we need to take a different look at the passage. If showing love to everyone was easy, then there would be no reason to read these stories. When we read them, we often picture ourselves alongside Jesus. And as Christians, it makes sense, right? Our religion places us on the side of good by default. Not exactly. When we imagine ourselves next to Jesus, this concept makes sense, though. But what about those who conceal hatred and judgment behind the veil of our faith? They imagine themselves by Jesus' side as well. Seeing a Christian so filled with hate often leaves us wondering where we went wrong. I think the answer is within how we read our stories. We identify with Jesus, but never the Pharisees. If we can change our perspective and challenge our own ways of thinking, and even our outlook on the world, perhaps we would set a better, purer example of what it means to be Christian. We are not all good, and likewise, we are not all bad. We are no better than those around us whose faith represents different values. We are all equal in the eyes of God. What will set us apart is our unconditional love and lack of judgment. I'm not denying that it'll be hard, harder than helping a blind man. But in order to represent that raw and real side of our faith, we have to live it. When we abandon judgment, we gain empathy. And with empathy, we can make change in God's name.
Jesus sought out the man born blind and asked him, "Do you believe?" The man said he did, but didn't know who he was. Jesus revealed himself as the Messiah, and the man dropped down to worship. When I first read the story, I felt it was odd that this man began worshiping Jesus as soon as he had proclaimed to be the Son of God. I felt this was a rushed decision. Shortly after, I realized that the man, like all of us, was born in the presence of God. He knew who God was. He didn't need Jesus to reveal himself. This is why he believes so strongly and suddenly. that this man is Jesus, the Messiah. This bond the man had with God was always in his mind, but only when he had regained his sight of the physical world were his eyes open to the powers of God. All of us have been blind at one point, but our faith allowed us to see. The Pharisees acted promptly when exiling the man, as they had sent him from the synagogue for only proclaiming Jesus to be a prophet. It was in their laws that a man may only be exiled from the synagogue for proposing Jesus to be the Christ. These actions sowed a confined acceptance of their own appreciation and acceptance of Jesus as the Messiah. These Pharisees must have had their eyes opened to be so afraid of Jesus. They were just not yet fully aware of the power he had over their lives. The man had very quickly become one of Jesus' disciples, making his belief in Jesus clear. Because he had opened his heart to God, Jesus knew where the man would be and rushed to find him. Jesus never doubted that this man would be able to proclaim Jesus as the Messiah after his eyes, heart, and mind were open. When told that he was speaking with Jesus, the man's quickness to bow down and worship shows the true power of man's instinct. This is the same instinct we all possess to tell us right or wrong, and also becomes effective when we know something to be the truth. I'd like to figure that this man was in severe disbelief as soon as he had washed his eyes and could see perfectly. This was a life-changing experience, something he had been waiting on for years. It's likely that the man had to make sure that what he was seeing was real, but as soon as he could see, he believed. This event of having his eyes open must have been the most monumental surprise in his entire life. Gaining something you hardly know existed must put you in a state of severe shock. Shortly after this event was an impactful event that continued this disbelief, but acceptance of miracle. He was sought out by Jesus, the same one he had proclaimed had fixed his vision. He'd never seen Jesus before, but he instantly bowed down and worshiped. There was no doubt in his mind that this was the Jesus who had given him sight. He was sure of this. Like the man, we already know Jesus, because even before we were born, we are children of God. My question to you is, what small change made you feel the presence of God? How have you protected yourself from this blindness?